Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about vampires and comics. Your host and my co-host, J.D. from Saskatoon.
Children of the night, what music they make.
Also with us is Red Ink.
Nowhere even close to Halloween.
Well, we might just save this for Halloween. Alright, so we're going to talk about vampires and comics. When you say vampires and comics, what's the first thing you think of, J.T.?
Depending on the day, it's either Dracula or Morbius.
Ah. Morbius, the living vampire. Let's start with him, because that's
those
the one...
gross fucking suction cup hands.
That only exists in John Semper's brain.
It's not even like... Okay, folks, if you haven't seen the 1990s Fox Spider-Man cartoon, when they introduced Morbius, it was during the Neogenic Nightmare storyline.
Part 17.
Part 17, second season.
Part 17, the Vampire Diaries, Part 12.
If I may continue.
Sorry.
I know you can't help yourself some days with such great material. Morbius is a fellow student at ESU with Peter Parker, and he borrows/steals the Neogenic Recombinator Ray and a sample of Peter's blood, which is fed on by a bat, which then attacks Morbius, and he becomes a fairly faithful visual representation of the character, except he's got a mouthful of fangs, but he develops octopus-style suckers on his hands. He's like, and you can't say blood in cartoons. He's like, I need plasma! And you can have him, like, tackle people out of frame and imply that he bit them, or how, you know, when you see them later, they've got bandages on their necks. Like, it's just, yeah, like Ben said, John Semper is like, no, he sucks it through his hands. Why? He sucks it through his hands.
Because this is literally how he was able to get it through the sensors. The sensors kept on telling him, can't have him consume blood. Okay. Could he at least, like, off screen? No. You know, just a bite, they won't even see it, there'll be bandage? No. Okay, it's what blood suction cup is on the hands. Okay, John, we'll let you have that. And John Semper takes this as a win, because at conventions, when he talks about it, he talks about the fact that I was allowed to have vampires on my cartoon, and Bruce Timm wasn't allowed to have Nocturna on his. Like, and I can't help but think, okay, you can take that win, John. That's not really a win. I'll let you have it.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember the first time I ever encountered Morbius as a kid was a reprint of the two-part story in Amazing Spider-Man that introduced Morbius as a brief villain and just really kind of a tragic, monstrous hero of, you know, Dr. Michael Morbius. He's dying of this rare blood disease, so first he tries this serum made from bat extract, and that doesn't work, and then he straps himself into this electric chair and gives him electroshock treatments, which doesn't really help except to activate the bat serum and turn him into a living vampire. And that's why he's called the living vampire, folks. He's not undead. He wasn't cursed with vampirism the way most vampires are usually cursed with. He did this to himself, and now he needs blood to live.
The funny thing is, this is very, very, very similar to Spider-Woman Jessica Drew's origin.
Oh, we don't have enough time to unpack that origin, Ben. Just read the wiki, folks.
Which one? She has like five different fucking origins.
That's what I'm saying.
She had a rare disease. Her dad gave her a combination of spider venom and radiation and boom, powers.
That's the only that version exists in the animated series.
I'm pretty sure that was her like third retconned origin as well in the comics.
Before she became an agent of Hydra.
That's correct.
Yeah. Morbius, though, I mean, visually, I love Morbius because, you know, he's got the flared collar with all the way down to his navel. And I love years later in one of the 2000 runs Morbius storylines where they explained that that's literally this special suit that he wore in his experiments with the bat extract and the shock treatment, and he just never took it off. And the only major redesign of Morbius ever got in terms of his costume is when he was part of the Midnight Suns in the 90s, and he literally walked into like a goth gimp shop and bought this leather onesie
with a flared collar.
No, he did not have a flared collar. He had like one of those dog collar-esque type of collars, and he has like all the shredded straps off the back to give the illusion of a cape. And I don't know, like, what do you guys think of Morbius?
I think he's a classic Spider-Man villain, but I don't think much else beyond that. What I always thought was interesting about how the character and how he was created was the name Morbius, the living vampire, because that implied he's a scientifically created vampire that has all the traits of vampirism, but is technically still a living, breathing creature. While in fiction back then, vampirism was considered a supernatural cause or case where it's literally a dead body reanimated.
Yeah, and again, Morbius was one of the characters that came out fairly soon after the Comics Code was relaxed somewhat in terms of such graphic content as vampires and werewolves and such. Do you like Morbius, Red?
Ugh, not really.
Okay, let me ask you this. You know the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, right? Oh, the one with the... They had a version of Morbius on there who, he didn't suck blood, he sucked life energy. He literally opened his maw, and the soul of a character would like waft out in this blue mist that he would swallow. Like, that's how they did it. Never mind, he got turned into a vampire because Dr. Octopus, through most of that series, had this penchant for creating essence of insert animal here that he would inject into somebody and they would mutate into that form. That's how we get the Lizard. That's how we got Rhino. We did have Scorpion, although that was more just a special suit, and he was one of Iron Fist's colleagues from the Kunlun Kung Fu school. Yeah, Morbius is good. And like I said, there's also Dracula, who one of my favorite, and it's only, he's literally only in one panel in an issue. I think it's in like the last issue of Astounding Wolfman, because it's one of my favorite hooks from the end of that series where you see Dracula's got his eye on the Astounding Wolfman, thinks he might become a problem someday. So it's hinting that, you know, if the series had continued, Dracula was going to become the next big bad. My favorite version of Dracula in the comics is the Marvel Comics version, specifically Tomb of Dracula, where he has like the, you know, the pencil thin mustache, and kind of like the way Gene Colan drew Dracula, he kind of looked like Timothy Dalton, which was, you know, if they had made a Tomb of Dracula movie in the 80s or 90s, I was like, you get Timothy Dalton to play the Lord of the Vampires. So I was like, as far as Dracula goes, do you have a favorite take in the comics, Bug Guys?
Well, Dracula, I mean, I can't think of much other portrayals of Dracula other than the Marvel version.
No, which version? I mean, there's been a couple of different versions. You've got, like I said, classic Tomb of Dracula, or you have the current version where he's sometimes wearing like red spiky armor with the long white flowing hair, or you got like old man Dracula who is currently living inside of Chernobyl with the rest of the vampire nation. What? Yes, that's... There was a storyline in the current run of Avengers where Dracula, you know, makes a big push to like, you know, global domination, of course. And by the end of it, he's defeated through the efforts of the Avengers and the Winter Guard, which is like the Russian Avengers teams, for those that don't know. And he's locked inside of Chernobyl, which, big shock, this was his plan all along. Because he tried to take over the world, and he was starting with Russia. So Russia was like, here, fuck it. You live where nothing else can live. Have fun. And now he's setting up, like, whatever the next phase of his grand Machiavellian scheme is.
Now we poisoned everything with radiation. Wah.
Yeah.
Is this the where Dracula, where he walks into the UN and demands a seat at the fucking table and basically he's trying to be like Dr. Doom, but he's fucking Dracula, so it's not working, and he's like demanding the UN give him like blood from the Red Cross?
Yes.
Oh my god.
Not the best flavor of Dracula. Like, I mean, you got Dracula and Tomb of Dracula. There was a couple of miniseries through Top Cow and Dynamite Comics where they had, it was a miniseries called Monster War, where you had like the Darkness, Tomb Raider, Witchblade, and the Magdalena, who's the most she's a direct blood relation to Christ via Mary Magdalene, and she basically is like a superpowered Buffy that works for the Catholic Church. And there's this miniseries where it's like Dracula, the Wolfman, Frankenstein, they're basically fight against the Witchblade heroes.
There's been a lot of weird ideas about
I think the best version of Dracula from any comic is probably Alucard from Hellsing.
Yeah, probably. You're right. Now, I want to touch something that the Red and I talked about last week, actually. Hellsing. People have an idea in their head that the character Abraham von Helsing from the Dracula novel is some sort of uber vampire hunter. But if you read the book, he's just a professor. He's just a scientist. And he just happens to be, like, the person who's asking the relevant questions, like, what's going on here? What's going on? And he's observant. He's noticing things. He has no prior vampire abilities or knowledge prior to the events of the book.
Yeah. Like, even the version that Anthony Hopkins played in Bram Stoker's Dracula with Keanu Reeves and his atrocious dialogue, he knew of various supernatural phenomena, but I don't think it was ever implied that he was a vampire hunter. He just knew how to deal with vampires.
Right. It's sort of transformed to where the name Van Helsing is like synonymous with a clan of vampire hunters now, and it's kind of funny. It's a
cool fucking name.
It is an awesome fucking name. It's I bring this up because I've been watching this series called What was it? What They Do in the Shadows? And the familiar character is this guy named Guillermo de la Cruz. And Guillermo does an Ancestry.com test. It turns out that he is a tiny bit Dutch. And his Dutch family name is Van Helsing. And it's like, but he's also a vampire familiar. But it turns out he's also extremely good at killing vampires.
Yeah, I remember that video you shared in the chat where you see him, because the whole thing with the where, if you haven't seen the movie, folks, watch the movie first and then go into the show, and they're both very good, although the movie has Taika Waititi as a vampire, and that's just a joy to watch. I love that video, Ben, where you see him, like, taking out all these Nosferatu, like, because he's doing that not to be a vampire, he's doing that to protect his master.
Yes.
But just the way that he just, and Guillermo is not like a slim trim guy. Like he's kind of chunky, and you just see him launching himself like a cannonball at these vampires and taking them down. It was absolutely delightful.
I like them jumping out of the second story window doing the double deuces.
Yeah, that was one of those particular awesome things. And
my favorite part of that is when he's feeding that squirrel, and he's like, I've been trying to make friends with this squirrel all summer. It's all right. You can come in and change the kids into a fucking vampire.
He invited it in. Yes.
Yeah. And there is no specificity. You invite them in, but do they have to be a vampire when you invite them in? I guess not. Now, when you talk about Van Helsing and Dracula, I do have to mention one of my favorite bad movies of all time.
The Hammer.
Van Helsing.
Oh, what's it called? The Wolverine one?
Yeah, with Hugh Jackman. Like, Richard Roxburgh as Dracula, a lot of people know him very much as M. Moriarty from the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen movie. He plays like this insanely over the top, trying to chew every inch of scenery that he can in his performance, and I love it. Like,
that just, movie just, has a lot of problems.
But it's the best kind of problems. Like, but I just love the way when you play Dracula on film or in write him in comics, like I like a certain aspect of theatricality, which is why I enjoy his performance so much. It also doesn't hurt that he has three of the hottest vampire brides in the history of film. But
well, there was also Kate Beckinsale in there in a corset, that they tightened way too tightly. They implied lots of weird things in that movie. They implied that Van Helsing is actually the Roman soldier Longinus.
They implied that he's the Archangel Gabriel.
But they said that he was a Roman soldier and he witnessed Christ's crucifixion. I thought they were implying he was.
Well, he was, but he was like from Jump Street, like from the Big Bang, he was Gabriel, and something to do like when Dracula became a vampire, he was involved. There's actually, like, even in the tie, like the movie novelization, they don't go into too much detail, and that's, there's a lot left open to interpretation. Dracula's good.
That movie's garbage. I'm sorry, that movie's garbage.
I don't disagree, but it's entertaining garbage. And I know of a few vampires in DC comics, but I don't recall if they've ever really established Dracula as a presence.
Yeah.
They did, kind of. He fights
Batman every once in a while.
Yeah, and there's also the infamous Vampire Batman trilogy.
The Red Trilogy?
Yes, the Red Trilogy. They had a female vampire as Batwoman's girlfriend for a while. Was it Nocturna?
I don't know.
It's not good. Don't go like as if it's good. It's not good because.
Well, I wasn't gonna do that. It's just the most I know of Nocturna, like from the New 52 on, they've portrayed Nocturna as very much being some sort of vampire. The version of Nocturna I know is from pre or just post Crisis, where she lived in like an observatory in Gotham City and was thought to have possibly been Jason Todd's mom. But well, she has like that disease where she burns in the sunlight.
Yes. And what they did with Nocturna and her is basically this really weird story where Nocturna was turning Katie Kane more and more apathetic. And also, continual blood sharing, bloodletting, and blood draining was making her more and more pale until the fact that she was actually starting to turn. I don't know if they ever resolved that because I dropped that book like a hot potato because it was garbage. I just was not interested enough because it was the same old storyline that Kate Kane has bad relationships with women because she's a damaged person and doesn't understand how to have relationships with people.
So are we talking about the comic or the TV show?
The comic, because the TV show is even hotter garbage. It is. That's like the only other instance of vampires I can think of is actually. I think it was the second year of Superman after the post-crisis reboot. There was a story where Superman teams up with Batman to go to this small rural town, and they're fighting vampires. And Superman notes that he got scratched. And he was confused by that. Batman's like, oh, yeah, they're vampires. They're mystical. By the way, clean that out with holy water, or else I'll have to come back for you in a week.
Yeah. And, I mean, the two other vampires I can think of in DC Comics, there's Looker from Batman and the Outsiders, and that's a problematic hot mess. Like, first, it's this very meek, good woman who finds out she's descended from like this subterranean culture of people, and they activate her powers and it somehow turns her from like this ordinary looking woman into like the hottest supermodel to ever grace the page of Playboy. And I think it's in the second volume of Outsiders, in the 90s where she gets turned by vampires who are trying to take over Geoforce's home country of Markovia. And every, even from like the New 52 onward, she's always been a vampire. Except now she runs a modeling agency and has it's porphyria or something. Like, it's that disease that some people, like, they don't have the tolerance to handle direct sunlight. So that's her excuse that why she's never seen during the day. And are you guys familiar with iVampire from DC?
I am familiar with it. I didn't like it.
Have you ever heard of that one, Red?
No.
Yeah. So a vampire from, like, I guess kind of colonial times, Andrew Bennett, who has the wherewithal to, you know, not give in to his thirst, except to, you know, drink from animals. And he turns his girlfriend into a vampire, and she goes off and become like the queen of the vampires and one of the deadliest scourges in history. And in the second chapter of that story, flash forward to the modern day, and he's still trying to track her down and kill her. And, you know, it's very much woe is me kind of vampire tale, which more often than not, they really just lean into like the action-y comic booky side of vampires. There isn't a lot of the woe is me tropes. I mean, you skip back over to Marvel, and we didn't even talk about Blade before.
Well, Blade is like the big headline if you're talking about vampires in comics. Everyone knows what Blade is.
Yeah. Although I did have...
Some motherfuckers want to ice skate uphill.
Yeah. Actually, I was talking with a friend of mine last October, because we were talking about, you know, what do you got on your docket for, you know, the movies you watch in the month of October leading up to Halloween. We were talking about Blade. We got to talking about the origins. He's like, was he always a vampire? And is... To the best of my knowledge, when he wasn't a straight up vampire for most.
He was never a vampire. He was a human born with just the ability that he was immune to vampirism.
Yeah, he didn't have any powers other than he's immune.
Yeah, and extended life, because they have said that, you know, he is, you know, he looks like he's in his like late 30s. Now, but he's over 100 years old. Although he never actually became, from what I've read, like I said, he never actually became a vampire until there was, they redesigned his look in the comics just after the movie. So now he looked like, you know, Wesley Snipes Blade. And then there is an issue of Amazing Spider-Man where he gets bit by Morbius, and then that's when he becomes, you know, a Dampier.
You know, he's not a Dampier.
Well, no. That's what they called him for years in the comics.
No, he didn't. No,
they've never.
They've actually have called him that in the comics.
After the Morbius bite, they did.
In the comics, they might, but in the movie, he is an actual vampire.
In the movie, he's a mutated vampire.
A lot of people like to think, like, because of his origins and stuff, everybody thinks that he's a half-breed. He's not. He's a vampire who walks in the day. Like, he has their weaknesses where he has to drink fucking blood. He just doesn't have to fucking
worry about silver.
No, I think silver actually hurts him. It just, he doesn't have to worry about sunlight.
Or garlic.
Yeah. But yeah, and we should mention his origin, folks, is no matter what time period his origin is set in, his mother is carrying him. He's to term, and she's bitten by a vampire. Sometimes they don't mention him by name. Usually it's Deacon Frost, Stephen Dorff in the movies, and that imparted, you know, his abilities to him. I'm gonna ask you, when you guys watch the Blade movies, you just watch one and two, or do you watch all three?
I just watch one and two.
I watch one and three.
Oh, someone dares to be different.
Interesting.
Three or two fucking sucks. It's terrible.
two has the real John Connor in it.
Okay, so
Okay, that's a good point. I just had to bring that up. Anyways, no, Red's got a good point though that Blade used to be just a guy who was immune to the vampire's bite and had a talent for looking for them, hunting them, and killing them. The whole idea
But
of go ahead, Red.
he was trained by Whistler to kill vampires and stuff like that.
Yes,
And
yes.
his weapons were never silver. They were made of ironwood, a special fucking tree that only grew in Africa,
Yes.
that the wood was just as solid as fucking steel. But because it was wood, it could kill fucking vampires.
Because Marvel had the rule that wood in the heart of a vampire kills the vampires.
And if you remove the stake, they come back.
Yes. And like I alluded to earlier, there was a Spider-Man Blade crossover comic like immediately after the movie came out, where Blade got bitten by Morbius the living vampire, and that gave him vampiric strength and agility and reflexes.
That's what I said.
So, but my point is Daywalker or Dampire was something that was pretty much invented by the movies and carried on to the comics later. Vampires,
Well,
let's.
Dampier has always been around for a long fucking
I
time.
mean, Blade is a Dampier, personally, specifically
But
him,
it's
actually.
also not pronounced Dampier, it's pronounced Pompier.
Ah, pardon me, I'm not Eastern European. Now, the most famous. I'm just going to say Dampier because I can't do that accent. The most famous Dampier I can think of that is not Blade, mistakenly, would have to be Alucard from the original Monster movies and kind of later Castlevania.
So I'm really only familiar with Castlevania from like the first three games and the Netflix series as far as Alucard goes.
Well, Alucard was first appeared in fiction, I believe, was the old Universal Monster movies. Like I think it was like the third or fourth Dracula movie. They had Lon Chaney Jr. as Alucard.
Think the first time I ever heard of Alucard was in that really, really bad Dracula, the series that I watched on YTV here in Canada in the 90s, where these kids move with their mom to like this Eastern European town or city where they live with their grandpa, and there's this there's Lucard Industries. And it turns out that their grandfather and thus the kids are like the last descendants of Van Helsing, and the head of Lucard Industries is Dracula, who decided to hide in plain sight and just write his name backwards because no one's ever going to figure that out. So when you talk about Dampier, like the character of D from Vampire Hunter D does classify as a Dampier because he is explicitly a half-breed in that, right?
Yep. There's even a
Okay.
scene. There's even a scene where he's put on trial by vampires, and they call him a Dampier. It's hard to understand because they say it the fucking Eastern European way. They say dump. They say a Bompier.
Okay.
So if you're not paying attention, you're like, "What the fuck is a Bompier?" But no, it's a Dampier is what they're calling him.
Now, I've only ever seen the movie, Ben, but you had mentioned 30 Days of Night before we started recording.
Yes. Comic is somewhat faithful. The idea is supposedly there is a town in Alaska, the northernmost town in Alaska, has a period of where the sun does not rise for 30 days. And
That's most of fucking. It's not just Alaska. If you go north to 60 degrees, that's. that's when that happens. It's Alaska, like all of Alaska goes through this, and
most
there's places in fucking Nunavut that goes through there, and northern Alberta. Just the edge of northern Alberta, though. I know that for sure.
Well, but the whole idea that there are areas up there that don't see the sun for a month.
Yeah, the idea. Go ahead.
Like, my dad lived so far up north that he doesn't have the fucking 30 days of night, but he has what I call 30 days of
dusk.
Yeah, 30 days of dusk where the sun does not fucking set. Like, all night it's pretty much like evening all fucking night.
Well, in the book and the movie, the premise is the same as a clan of vampires. I don't know, got on Wikipedia or something and found out, hey, wait a minute, there's this town we can go to that's full of people where it's night the whole time. We don't have to rest. We can just fucking gouge ourselves for a whole month. And that's what they do. The town sheriff, who's having problems with his marriage and his wife, that's like some human drama because, of course, kills one vampire, takes the vampire's blood, injects it himself, and then for some reason is able to kill these hundreds of year old vampires because he just freshly injected himself with the blood of a vampire. Like these are vampires that should have been used to fighting with super strength. Just some sheriff that like randomly got vampiric powers should not instantly overwhelm them. That's the biggest problem I have with the conclusion.
It's because it's a dumb premise. It's because they can't smell him. He smells like a vampire once he does that. Because they can smell humans. They can find humans. So he can't sneak up on him. He can't ambush him because he smells like a human. Then he does that and fucking... Now he smells like a vampire, so they can't fucking detect him.
All right, well...
And they're pretty much like very rabid Nosferatu vampires.
Yes, they're pretty much gouging themselves on this whole town, and the premise is dumb. And at the end, he's like, "Okay, I killed the vampires. I'm just gonna sit here in the sun and let the sun kill me as the sun rises." And he dies. And there's a follow up book that I've never read because the first one was enough for me. And when I say enough for me, I mean was awful. But 30 Days of Night is like one of those really weird periods where like there were all these indie comics with weird premises, and movie studios are like, oh, comics are big. Let's just grab any properties we can grab and make them into movies.
Yeah. I mean, out of the days that, you know, in the early aughts when 30 Days of Night came out, there was a series that I collected because I've always been more of an action movie guy when it comes to my monsters, so I enjoy those movies like very much like Blade and Van Helsing. It was a series called Covert Vampire Operations, and it's set in this world. It's from IDW Comics, where the U.S. government knows of the existence of vampires and other supernatural creatures and phenomena, so they have like this black ops unit with these vampires who were set out on these seek and destroy missions. And you take every cliched stereotype from like a group of soldiers and every stereotype from vampires, and it comes together in this delightfully trashy comic book where they even have a scene like the first one there, they got to go and assassinate this premier from the United Arab Emirates. And one of the vampires is this one called Britt, who she's one of the hottest supermodels from the 1970s who got turned into a vampire. So she's frozen in like the physical prime. And, you know, she has to put her mouth in this dental appliance that sands down her fangs. And it gets a little more into a spy-fi kind of thing with that. But I would highly recommend, because these are like straight up just vampires. Like you get turned, you become a vampire, you got strength, speed, and it's apply that to an action movie setup. But also from the 90s and the early aughts, you know, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the Buffy comics. And thus they've been mentioned. We need never speak of them again.
the problem with the Buffy comics is, you know, Buffy.
Joss Whedon.
I hate to say it, but yes. The longer he lets stuff go on, the more he lets stuff get off the rails. There's a scene in, like, I forgot how far along, I think like season 9 of Buffy and Angel comics, where Buffy and Angel, like, got Superman powers, and they started, like, hate fucking while flying across the globe, smashing in the mountains.
And that was the season 8 comic.
Jesus there, Christ, you know this?
Yes. Don't even act surprised, then. They basically had to hate fuck to restart magic. That's the short and the sweet of it.
Ben, that reaction, you knew it was coming.
I did not know JT knew exactly.
You knew JT would say something.
I really didn't think you read that, because I only found out about it because I saw scans on fucking Scans Daily 2 years ago. I did not think anyone would give that comic the time of day after, like, they made fucking, what's his name, Xander into fucking Nick Fury.
Well, but he had already lost the eye in the TV show before it ended, so it... And the comics didn't come out until, like, years after the show was over, so... But, yeah, they... Vampires in Buffy, it's the vampires in Buffy, you know, they scrunch their faces up and they get all the snarly faces and all that. When you talk... Another vampire from the 90s and into the 2000s was Cassidy from Preacher. I dare say everyone's favorite Irish vampire.
Never read Preacher.
Preacher's okay. It's very edgelord.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Garth Ennis comic, so what are you going to do? But
it's very edgelord because it's like, how can they piss off Christians while still having enough artistic vision that can go, it's just a comic book. Don't get mad, bro.
I think you're selling it short, Ben, but
Not really.
It's a little more than that. But no, Cassidy. The reason I like Cassidy, besides him being like this shit talking best friend of the main, you know, of Jesse Custer, the main character of the comic, is he is a vampire. He needs to consume blood to live. He can't stand sunlight. With his vampirism, and a couple other vampires, there weren't a lot in the comic. It's something I've never seen another vampire comic. He doesn't have fangs. Like, he's literally like a Norman human being. He's however many decades old, and it's literally just some ordinary person tearing another mofo's throat out to get at the red stuff.
Well,
and as much as I liked him in the comics, I kind of like the live action version of Cassidy from the TV series. Just there's more to work with there, and overall I think the character came across better in the show.
Now, I think we'd be remiss to not mention the graphic novel adaptation of Richard Matheson's masterpiece, I Am Legend.
I still haven't read that one.
I Am Legend is interesting because the book technically predates a lot of the more modern vampire fiction we're talking about. Vampires in I Am Legend do not have superior strength or speed. What they do have is basically longevity. And the whole point Matheson was making, here are these things that eat humans, and they have human intelligence. And that was compelling to me in a book.
The point of I Am Legend is humanity has evolved.
Yes.
Not on purpose, like it was a mistake, but humanity has evolved into something else. And the main character, even though he sees the other humans as monsters, he's the actual fucking monster.
Exactly right. And that's the other, like I said, they have human intelligence. It's not like they degraded to brain dead zombies or, or snarling things that barely have any organizational skills. They're all intents and purposes is human. And Neville, the name of the character Neville, is just trying to survive himself by killing these things when he can, not realizing that like Red said, he's becoming the monster. He's becoming the boogeyman. And I Am Legend is just interesting to me in that way because every time people try to adapt it, they forget that one part.
Or it becomes the Omega Man.
The Omega Man's not terrible. The Omega Man's the Charlton Heston one, right?
Yeah.
Not terrible, not great. I actually prefer the Vincent Price version.
I didn't know there was a Vincent Price version.
Yes, Last Man on Earth.
I'm not familiar with that, so.
But, like, I Am Legend sort of paradoxically inspired the zombies genre because, what's his name, Romero? Wanted to make an I Am Legend movie, but he couldn't get the rights, so he had to make some changes, and that's how he got Night of the Living Dead. And the one thing that made the vampires in I Am Legend just so frightening, the human intelligence is gone after that. Now you have the mindless swarm. And
I don't think it was truly mindless. Like I haven't read, you know, the graphic novel, but like I did see the Will Smith movie. I think the human intelligence had degraded to the point where it was almost indistinguishable from like animal intelligence, or very much more of an instinctual kind of thought process.
Well, I'm talking specifically. Go ahead, Red.
In the original story, they could talk and shit like that. They yes. Were...
Okay.
Like, they were all... They're pretty much human, except they're just nocturnal now.
And drink blood. And they also... Matheson explained via Neville eventually at the halfway point of the book going, like, you know what? I need to figure out what's going on in my world. Neville starts investigating scientifically what's going on. But he's investigating scientifically as a layman would, because he is not a scientist. He's not a biologist. He's just trying to figure stuff out based off of books he finds. And he discovers lots of things about the vampires. He discovers Crosses is not based on any sort of supernatural thing. It's just some sort of psychosis in the brain, like some part of the brain is affected by the disease. So when if they see religious symbology that they believed in their previous life, it affects them. He explains this because his neighbor was a Jew, and the cross did nothing to frighten his neighbor, but the Torah did. This is in the book.
I know. There's a really shitty fucking movie. I can't remember what it is. It stars the guy who played Zero Cool and fucking
Hackers.
And Hackers. And he's fighting this vampire and he brings out a cross and the guy goes, "That's not gonna work on me. I'm Jewish." And then he goes,
Dracula 2000.
And then he presses a button on the cross and the knife comes out and he goes, "God loves you anyways," and he fucking kills
him. Well, but Ben, I got to interrupt here. That's only the preamble, Red, to one of the most gloriously awesome and gloriously bad movies in the history of film, when it's Johnny Lee Miller, Zero Cool, shouts, "Never, ever fuck with an antiques dealer."
But the one thing I have to add is, circle all the way back to Marvel Dracula, is this actually kind of worked in reverse, where Dracula tries to suck the blood of Kitty Pryde. She does this, the shape of the cross. Dracula does nothing to Dracula. But when he grabs her neck, she has a Star of David necklace on, and that burned him.
I think with the Marvel Dracula, it's the whole idea of faith and, you know, a higher power like that. And also, Dracula, one of the one of my favorite vampire comics. I got this, there was X-Men Classics in the 80s and 90s that would reprint older X-Men stories. And there's this one special where they reprinted one of the annuals, which deals with Dracula coercing Storm into stealing the Darkhold from Rachel Van Helsing, who was a character in the Tomb of Dracula comics. And it references a previous encounter with the X-Men where Storm actually was turned into a vampire. And they end the story with Rachel Van Helsing being turned and then killing herself, you know, with the morning sun, because she's not going to live like this. And that's, do you ever read the Mutant X comic that came out in the very late 90s?
No, but I have to add that that version of the story we're talking about, Bloodstorm,
yeah,
did show up in All New X-Men when the original five did some dimensional hopping and brought Bloodstorm back as like a team member for some reason.
And she and Teen Cyclops were a thing. And also kind of tangenting off from Marvel's Dracula, there's one of my favorite characters in the Night Stalkers with Blade was Hannibal King, who is a vampire detective who, when he was turned, you know, he, one of those guys, he had enough force of will to prevent himself from ever taking human life, so he isn't really affected that much by the weaknesses of the vampires. He has a lot of their strengths, but it's very much, you know, what if a detective character out of like Dashiell Hammett was a vampire? Like, his desk in his office is this huge, like, carved, overwrought kind of thing, and that's his coffin that he sleeps in during the day. And also the basis for Ryan Reynolds in the third Blade movie. And thank Christ they didn't try to do that, because I probably would have walked out of the fucking theater. I mean, granted, I didn't walk out of Blade Trilogy when I actually saw it in real life, but that's only because me and my friends got loaded before we walked into the theater that night. No, I liked Hannibal King and Blade, and some of the more modern Blade comics were done by Howard Chaykin. He really gets into like the off-screen relationship that Hannibal and Blade have had over the years, like before stories set before Blade showed up in Tomb of Dracula and before Hannibal King was introduced. But when you talk about, again, Marvel vampires, have you guys ever read the Doctor Strange story where he killed all the vampires?
No, I have not.
Yeah. It's something involving the Montesi formula, and it's a spell from the Darkhold, because in the Marvel Universe, the Darkhold, like C'thon's, the collection of all of C'thon's magic, was responsible for creating vampires in, you know, ancient times. And there's a spell in there that allows you, will remove the curse, and it basically for probably 4 or 5 years until just before the Midnight Suns line started, all vampires in the Marvel Universe were dead, Dracula on down. And then I think that in the story they wrote, because of like events within the Midnight Suns comics weakened the effects of the spell, and that slowly allowed vampires to come back. Of course, this resulted in resurrecting Dracula and a bunch of the others. It's one of the last times you see characters like Hannibal King, Blade, and what's his name? Frank something, that was like the human character in Darkstalkers. I think it's Frank Drake, who's like a descendant of Dracula, show up. And then, like I said, 4 or 5 years later, they reinvented these guys as the Night Stalkers during Midnight Suns. Like, there's so many vampires. Is there anything we haven't mentioned, Ben, besides Vampirella?
Well, Vampirella is technically an alien.
Yeah. And again, depending on who's writing. The only other one that I can think of, have either of you guys read, it's a very recent comic, a series called American Vampire. Have you ever heard of this?
I've heard of it.
I will never fucking read it.
Why is that?
Because I'm not a fan of the author.
Oh, No love for Scott Snyder.
Nope.
At least he's not Zach.
That's purely academic.
I know. But for those of our listeners who don't know, it's follows a vampire named Skinner Sweet who can walk in the sun, like he does not burn in daylight. And the overall story is how vampires have affected American history. So, you know, all the major historical events, like at some point vampires have, you know, adjusted things. And it's about how Skinner Sweet, who has no love for the other vampires, you know, fucks with their goings on. And, you know, it's kind of you can't really call it an anthology series, but it has that flavor because each story is usually set in a different time period. And overall, I don't really have a problem with Scott Snyder's writing. I really love the comic a little more for the art. It's done by Rafael Albuquerque, who did that really awesome Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle title, like probably about 10 years ago, something like that, 10, 15 years ago. It was came out just after Infinite Crisis, so probably around 2006. And it's just a lot of fun.
Well, not a comic exactly, but a very comic book-like story. We have to at least give a mention to the novel and movie. The Great Emancipator, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Can you believe that I still haven't watched that movie?
Yes.
Not for lack of trying. I just literally have never gotten around to it. How does the story go in that, Ben? As if the title wasn't a dead freaking giveaway.
Abe Lincoln's parents are killed by vampires, and he's trained by a immortal vampire who's good how to hunt vampires in a very weird form of axe foo.
Like twirling that thing around like he's Donatello with a bow staff.
Yes. And Abraham Lincoln decides the best way to stop the vampires is to cut off their food supply. And turns out that the vampires are using black slavery as an almost inexhaustible supply of food. So if by freeing the slaves, Abraham Lincoln is deciding that's the best way to weaken the vampire stances and kill them. John Wilkes Booth, who is a vampire himself and an assassin, goes after him. And pretty much just fit all the historical events of Abraham Lincoln's life and put it with vampires in it. And that is Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Was it gay wrestling in there?
I think the wrestling's in there, yeah. How else would Abraham Lincoln get to peak physical condition to fight vampires?
So I'm just looking at the wiki here. It does not list who plays John Wilkes Booth. And I really want to know. I'm gonna watch this movie later tonight, guys. I'm not gonna lie. Like, this is the sort of dumb shit that I love.
Well, Abraham Lincoln at the end becomes an immortal and sort of watches in the shadows, waiting for the time that he can rise again as a hero.
Now, one really, like, see, this comic almost physically bothers me. Because it's not like I've had, like, the deepest faith in my life, but it's written by the creator of Hackslash, Tim Seeley, a series of one-shots called Loaded Bible. Let me pitch it to you. In a post-apocalyptic landscape, a cabal of scientists and religious fanatics have succeeded in cloning Jesus Christ, and he goes to war with the vampires that are running amok over the world.
Yeah.
Hey, vampires, you can't, like, do that, man. How about we all just chill?
Yeah. And it's just... The concept... Okay, it's a post... again, it's just some of the stuff they do in there. It's just it hits that nerve for me that it's like I've only ever read the first. I was like, okay, this is an awesome batshit idea. So on the surface, it didn't bother me, but once you read the comic, and it just like there's, but it's the idea of Jesus fighting vampires. Like, name me somebody else who is more perfectly suited for fighting the Scourge. That's all I'm saying.
I think vampires would just explode around Jesus, wouldn't they?
Well, that's a funny thing. I want to bring up one other point here. There was a comic book adaptation of Stephen King's Dark Tower novels. And I think it was in the fourth book that Roland and his crew come across the priest from Salem's Lot, who was a disgraced priest because he lost a duel of faith against Barlow, the vampire Barlow from Salem's Lot. It's actually a pretty interesting scene if you've ever seen it from the original movie. And this disgraced priest later discovers that he can defeat vampires with a touch, because once he finds his faith again, he's almost unstoppable. He's able to channel his power through either a cross or a turtle necklace. Now, people are like, why a turtle necklace? I think we all... Red, you explain why a turtle necklace.
Because a turtle barfed out the fucking universe. If you ever watched Stephen King's It, all right?
I'm sorry, what?
You've never watched Stephen King's It?
No.
You never read the novel?
No.
So, to taunt the fucking Losers Club, I think that's what they're called?
Yes.
Pennywise tells them how the universe was created. Because he's basically saying there's no fucking God. He tells them that the universe actually is on top of a fucking space turtle. A gigantic space turtle. All of existence is on top of the shell of a space turtle. And it came into existence because one day the fucking turtle got sick and it puked out the universe.
Okay, is he just homaging the Discworld stuff, or is that like a straight up ripoff?
Why, there's that happens in Discworld?
Well, it's been years since I've read any of the Discworld novels, but isn't that like some part of the greater mythology that there's like a giant turtle involved?
I don't know.
Have you ever read Discworld, Ben?
No, I keep on hearing about it, but no. But anyways.
But go ahead, still explaining. So they also tell, like, the kids kind of like are like, oh, okay, this turtle's God, and this turtle can defeat you. And one of the kids was actually getting messages from the turtle in order to defeat Pennywise. Then Pennywise tells him, oh yeah, the turtle's fucking dead. I killed it.
But the ritual of Chud that they do later kind of disproves that? Anyways.
It's confirmed the turtle's dead in the Dark Tower.
Okay. But anyways, the priest, whose name I forget, is able to, like I said, at first he has to use a cross or the turtle necklace, but then he's able to just do it with his touch. He's able to, like, fucking blast vampires with, like, faith Kamehamehas, basically, at the end before he gets overtaken because they're fucking swarming him. And, look, this is the same fucking book where Roland pops up and pulls Stephen King away from getting run over by a van.
Seriously?
Yes. Like, the Dark Tower books quickly became Stephen King's Sliders.
I'm not completely against that idea.
It's more like Stephen King's Kingdom Hearts.
Stephen King's Tsubasa Chronicles?
But he came up with it first, so everything else is a copy of his. So.
Stephen King's a fantastic writer, don't get me wrong. We're saying things that sounds very derisive of him, but it's still weird as fuck. And keep in mind, these are the books he wrote when he's sober.
It says something when he was on drugs that he came up with, like Cujo and the Dark Half, and
he doesn't even remember writing Cujo.
his fucking editor like called him and said, "Steven, great manuscript." And Steve's like, "What manuscript?"
Yeah. No. I mean, I think we kind of hit the limit on the comics, but you kind of started mentioning a certain actor portraying Dracula earlier. So I want to ask you guys, both you and Ben, Red, who's your favorite Dracula on film?
Well, that's, I can't remember his name. There's only one person who's really good at playing Dracula, and the fuck is his name? He played the fucking White Wizard in
Christopher Lee.
Yeah, Christopher Lee.
Yeah. There's something very haunting about Bela Lugosi's accent delivery, like "Children of the Night." It's "I don't drink wine." The way he says it is like fucking Commissioner Gordon did that line too. I don't drink wine. It doesn't quite have the same punch.
Yeah, Christopher Lee, he's my favorite. My first Dracula ever, it wasn't Bela Lugosi, it was...
"Your hairstyle's so gay."
I heard that. It was the boy.
Martin Landau did a pretty good Bela Lugosi in Ed Wood, but no, Red would probably recognize this show as... My first Dracula... quote unquote vampire was the late great Billy Van playing Count Frightenstein on The House of Frightenstein, which is this kid show that we had here in Canada growing up in the 80s.
I fucking hate that show.
Oh, you lie to yourself like that, Red. Also, the show, amazingly, the production of the show, they got Vincent Price in Toronto for like a week and a half. And he shot all these interstitials between segments and the opening and closing of the show, Ben. And that's where it's like, okay, this guy is creepy as fuck, and he's creepier than the vampire running the shit show. It's, you know, how I got into Vincent Price films, but I love Count Frightenstein. I can't remember the name of the guy who played Dracula in the Monster Squad. But I know he was... he was the same guy that played Zorro in the half-hour Disney Zorro series they had in the 90s.
I have a really good pick.
All right.
Not Dracula per se, but have you ever seen Shadow of a Vampire?
That's
William Dafoe.
Yes. And it's like the making of the original
Nosferatu, which is based off of Dracula. What I love about Shadow of the Vampire is, by the way, it's fucking William Dafoe. It's fucking William Dafoe. And there's this great scene. There's this great scene where he's talking to the producers, and basically the director gives this whole line. Oh, he's a method actor. He's always in character. And don't question him too much. So you have these other guys talking to him. And he's like, "Well, have you ever read Dracula?" And Defoe's like, "I read it. It made me sad." And they're like, "Why did it make you sad?" And he's like, "Well, yeah, you have Dracula. He was a prince. He was a count. He used to have servants. He used to have people around him. But that he was so segregated from everyone else, stuck in this castle by himself, and he has a visitor, and he has to be a good host." So he has to pretend he has servants. He has to go around, make the beds himself. He has to figure out how to cook meals for this person when he hasn't tasted human food for hundreds of years. It's like it's such a sad book. And I'm like, wow.
When you talk about sad vampires, that made me think of...
Lestat?
Oh, no. God.
No, I was not going to Lestat. I was going to the greatest and only man to play Skeletor on film. Frank Langella did a version of Dracula in the 1970s, which he's still a monster and the villain of the piece, but he plays him in this, like, you can't help but kind of feel for the guy because he's literally sad. Like, when he does the Children of the Night line, he doesn't say it with a little bit of joy in his voice the way Bela Lugosi did. He's just like, he literally says, what sad music they make. And they play it off more of kind of a romantic kind of touch on Dracula, which ultimately kind of makes you, because he just wants to be loved. Like, he doesn't want to be this monster. I just always really enjoyed that. And it also, you know, he sacrifices himself, like, to release the woman he's fallen in love with from his power. And then you see, like, might be his cape fluttering off in the breeze, or it might be this big ass vampire bat. And also, if you talk about vampires in the 80s, you know, we got two of my favorite films, Lost Boys and Fright Night.
I thought you were going to bring up Love at First Bite.
Again, a movie I haven't seen.
It's like made for you.
Who's in it?
George Hamilton as Sold. Dracula.
It's a George Hamilton movie from the 80s. I fucking love that guy. But which between Lost Boys and the Fright Night movies, which do you guys prefer?
Lost Boys.
Lost Boys.
No love for Roddy McDowall as Peter Vincent?
No.
No.
Yeah. Lost Boys is my preferred. I like the goofy effects and dialogue and the performances in Fright Night, but Lost Boys legit scared me the first couple of times that I ever saw it when I was young. Now, who is your favorite member of the vampire troupe?
Well, there's only one good fucking actor in the vampire troupe, and that was fucking
Kiefer.
Kiefer Sutherland, yeah. For some reason, I want to say Chris Sutherland. That's why I stopped.
Yeah.
Like, that's not his name.
Yeah. Kiefer Sutherland as David is good. I think the other one that I really liked is the guy who played Max, and I am just going to look up the actor's name because he passed away a few years ago, and I loved him. Edward Herrmann as Max. He was legit one of my favorite vampires in that movie besides Kiefer. Although everyone says that Grandpa Max, I've seen fan theories say Grandpa Max was like a vampire, and no, they actually
he's a vampire hunter.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, they have the two different comic miniseries based on the Lost Boys. I don't know if you guys have ever seen these.
I have not.
There was one came out. Just after when the first direct-to-DVD sequel came out years ago, The Lost Boys, The Tribe, which the main vampire in that is actually played by the half-brother of Kiefer Sutherland. And there is a kind of a prequel miniseries where this kid's got a vampire problem and he finds Edgar, you know, Corey Feldman, and he tells him the story of what happened after they fought David and the other vampires. And it turns out that Grandpa Max was keeping himself human by drinking this, like, tainted blood, and that's what was in the root beer bottles in the fridge. And then there is it's just called The Lost Boys, again, written by Tim Seeley, who, if you've never read any of his comic books, folks, like, he's dabbled in superheroes, but he's done mainly horror comics like Hack Slash and a lot of other stuff. He's a fan of the genre, and it shows in his writing. He did a actual sequel miniseries, like, picks up a couple of weeks after the events of the film, and is somewhat inspired by the much rumored sequel that they were trying to make to the film called The Lost Girls, in which a tribe of, like, all female vampires come to town to seek revenge on Michael and his brother for killing Max and the other vampires. And in that miniseries, it's revealed that Sexy Sax Man is actually a vampire hunter.
Well, if you want to actually pay attention to the movie, Grandpa Max is the only person who really knows what's going on. Like,
all the damn vampires?
I wouldn't say he's a vampire hunter, but he's fucking aware of what's going on.
He's like Van Helsing.
Because there's things that, like, their vampires have rules that other vampires don't. Like, they don't like taxidermy, are disgusted by it. And Grandpa Max is constantly putting, like, fucking taxidermy next to the fucking kids and shit.
Where does that come from?
Huh?
Like, vampires not liking taxidermy, or is that just in the film?
That's just in the film.
Oh, okay.
Well, this leads us to a very interesting segue. What is your favorite version of vampires?
Okay, this is kind of a cop-out.
Okay.
But I like the traditionally, like, they bite, suck your blood, you take their blood, you, like, the supernatural curse vampires and the vampires in Blade. But in the context that, like, I like just kind of normal human-ish vampires like that, like, not the master vampire from Salem's Lot, or where they become like giant CGI nightmares like in the Van Helsing movie,
or there's one vampire media we completely skipped.
What's that?
Underworld.
Sorry, I started thinking of Kate Beckinsale in a tight leather bodysuit and I lost all sense of time.
If I remember correctly, the guy who made the Underworld, his name is Weissman, I believe, or Lensman or something like that, got sued by the people who made Vampire the Masquerade.
Yeah, well, the Len Wiseman, who I know for a time, I don't think he's still married to Kate Beckinsale, but he was at one point.
Let's put it this way. If Vampire the Masquerade sued fucking Underworld, they're idiots. Because this is the same story that I came up with when I was a fucking child and used to draw little comics about it. Like werewolves versus vampires. It's something a child can come up
with. It's a five-year-old taking two toys, like, bam, 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 is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had written started working on a story like years ago about, and it turned out it's like Underworld by way of Twilight. When I think about it, is this guy who meets like two different women. One's a werewolf, one's a vampire, and yada yada. The very much the vampires in Underworld, I would say, like, that's that sweet spot, because, you know, where you get the gothic over the topness, but it doesn't go, like, they don't become full on monsters, and by that I mean they don't become like the batshit insane creatures from Hugh Jackman's Van Helsing. That's my favorite kind of vampire. What's yours, Ben?
That's a hard question. I like the supernatural aspect to it, because the idea of the vampires being the undead and the person losing something intrinsic to themselves in the process fascinates me. I almost want to say the Buffyverse vampires, except, like, there's a lot of garbage there too, and so it's really hard. That makes me almost default to the Marvel vampires, like Marvel vampires without the super strength.
If you go with Buffy versus vampires, then I guess you like the fucking metaphor of female menstruation, because that's what they are.
but like I said, the one thing I did like about the Buffy versus vampires is. When you vamp out, you lose your soul, like something intrinsic that makes you human, that keeps you from making these decisions about, like, eating other people, that is deep in other humans. You lose that, and you become much more willing to do that. There's something interesting about that, but the rest of it is like the vamp out face. I hate that. Everything else is just, like, not so good. The fact that people who vamp out and instantly know how to do karate or some shit, it's just the blood of, it's a lot of bleh.
Well, it's kind of like when you become a Power Ranger and all of a sudden you know how to fight and pilot these giant mechanical constructs. I'm not wrong.
Like, there's a story I have to do with Buffy the Vampire Slayer that Joss Whedon wanted to create a series that reflects a young woman growing up and coming into her own. And that's why the vampires kind of represent the dirty part of... Well, you can't say dirty. They represent fucking female menstruation. Anyways, they're not supposed to be liked or shit like that. And then when the executives approached him, they're like, oh, we could have sexified it up. We got to make it sexy. But get teenagers and here's this character named Angel. Joss Whedon freaked the fuck out. He did not want Angel around.
But then we wouldn't have had David Boreanaz's career.
Oh, well, he would have shown up in Bones eventually.
Yeah. I should ask you guys, do you, when it comes to, like Red said, the, you know, the vampire face from Buffy, do you prefer where they physically transform, like maybe get pointy ears or something, or you just like it where the, you know, the fangs pop out and that's it?
Yeah, like just the fangs and getting pale and shit. Like, that's about it.
Yeah. And paleness in and of itself, I don't see necessarily as a direct symptom of vampirism. I see that as a prolonged effect of just not getting any sun.
Well, yeah. And it's actually one of the myths of vampires that comes from, like, you know, the superstitious beliefs back in the day, because where corpses were before they're buried, you know, like, you can kind of faintly see light through them. And it's said to have given the bodies this weird glow, which is where we get the fucking disco ball that is Edward Cullen in Twilight. Yeah. And stuff like that.
Well, I want to bring up one thing. And this is going to be my final bit on this episode. Have you ever seen Dracula Untold?
Yes.
No, it sounds familiar, but I
well, can't place the it. Ottoman prince that fights Vlad Dracul, you know,
Dracul.
Yeah, son of the Vlad Tepes, you know, son of the dragon.
Oh, this is that one with where the first time they tried to reboot the Universal Monsters.
Yeah, the Munsterverse, as JD
puts it. It slipped my mind. I have seen that movie.
Well. Because they established early on that silver affects vampires, both visually and if they touch it, it affects them. And so this Ottoman prince fills his tent with silver coins. Like, the ground is full of fucking silver coins. And Vlad's going in there to save his son, and he has to, like, fucking walk on silver. The silver's shining everywhere. It's fucking up his eyes. And it's like, I'm like, see, that's the guy who's prepared to fight a fucking vampire.
Yeah. I'd forgotten about that. I mean, we've talked about the movie before, and yeah, I kind of like how the vampires were treated. Like, you get the fangs, and at some point, like, where their faces kind of morph just so, and you kind of see the, you know, the monster underneath the skin like that.
I like the subtlety. Like, I don't like the transformation. To me, it's much scarier to have a monster that can fucking blend into society.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, it's Dracula Untold has lots of problems, lots of flaws, but it's like that one idea there to go, okay, they're doing something. They're doing something. Doesn't save the movie. Does not fucking save the movie. But it's there. Not much else we can say about vampires right now, other than What We Do in the Shadows. I would watch it. It's hilarious. It's fucking hilarious.
I would recommend, if you haven't seen The Lost Boys yet, first, shame on you, and second, that is your homework, dear listeners. Watch that movie. What would you recommend, Red?
Yeah. I recommend them never to watch the fucking sequels, ever.
Okay. Outside of that, what's a vampire, something involving vampires that you would recommend?
John Comforter's Vampires.
Yes!
Good pick. Very good pick.
Are you possessed by demons, priest?
Well, I also really have to recommend the first Blade movie, because I think that movie is just better than it had to any right to be.
And also has, if you were to make a top 10 list of badass lines in an action-y type movie, Wesley Snipes, motherfucker trying to ice skate uphill.
Oh my god.
That's like number 7 at least.
You know he didn't want to say that, right?
That doesn't make it any less awesome, Ben.
Well, he's the one who came over the line.
Yes, but
he's like, God, no, that's fucking retarded. No, you're going to say it. I'm just saying it's, yeah, the first Blade is dead, and that is literally my favorite line in the entire franchise. Also, don't watch Blade the TV series. It's fucking horrible.
Or you could watch
the Crows. The Crow TV series.
With
that one was made bearable by the magic that is Mark Dacascos.
Is that the fucking chairman?
Yes.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. Well, you know what? If we're going this far back, I'm just going to recommend fucking Forever Night.
Yeah. Do you have a stroke?
Yes.
Are you channeling JT? Like, what the fuck?
Okay, excuse you, sir.
I don't know, man. You're the one who loves dumpster fires, and Ben's recommending an absolute dumpster fire.
Well, it's...
I love both of you, so that just makes you guys both dumpster fires.
I'm throwing it out there because it's fucking awful, cheesy vampire stuff from the 90s, late 80s. And okay. It is fucking awful, but
a test of your will, or a test of your resolve, Ben. I challenge you to, if you can find it on YouTube, I challenge you to watch the original pilot movie for Forever Night starring Rick goddamn Springfield.
No.
If you're going to recommend bad vampire shit, might as well recommend fucking Anne Rice's novels.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Anne Rice is...
Okay.
One thing I have to say about the vampires and Anne Rice is it's not even something that Anne Rice is originally guilty of, because there's a lot of that sexual
ambiguity.
Not ambiguity, but the energy in Bram Stoker's Dracula. And that sort of was always a component to modern vampirism in fiction, was the sexual component that people just try to pretend it's not there, but it's fucking there. It's the fucking elephant in the room. And some people just go way too far in there, like fucking Twilight.
Yeah. Interview with a Vampire is a legit great film, though. And compared to the quasi-sequel that is Queen of the Damned, that movie is a goddamn masterpiece.
Let's put it this way. Anne Rice herself, her only commentary on that movie was, I didn't think Tom Cruise could play Lestat, but he did. That's the only thing she likes about it.
That's like her saying, well, it certainly was a movie.
And didn't she, like, give up writing vampires and become, like, a born-again Christian?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's all I can say is yes.
Yeah, so... The I don't think there's much more we can mention.
No, there isn't, but JT will report to us tomorrow when he watches Love at First Bite tonight, because he has to. Because who's Dracula in that movie again?
George Hamilton, apparently.
Yes.
How
can a man with that deep a tan play Dracula?
But he found a way. Also, if you've never seen the film, listeners, Blackula. Great blaxploitation horror movie.
I recommend the Helsing series.
Okay, that's a good series to recommend. Oh, this is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Reading.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.